Welcome. You're tuned into Life as a Sacred Journey. Every week, we bring a new perspective to aging and caregiving. Here is your host, Michelle Pope.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the virtual neighborhood of Life is a Sacred Journey. I am your host, Michelle Pope, and it is always my pleasure, one, just to be alive, and so to bring that joy of life to you every Friday morning at 8 a.m. Wow. I mean, we're growing. We're touching more lives. And I just feel so honored. I just want you to know, I am humbled that there are those of you who have followed us from the very beginning. I am grateful that you share, that you, because what you're doing is not only creating a virtual community, but I have to be honest, you're supporting ASAP. When we build our viewership, listenership through all of our different platforms, we are now going to sponsors and different folks to see if they will sponsor Life is a Sacred Journey so that we can pass that funding through to ASAP, which will be so beneficial to the programs that we have here. So I thank you for just sitting back, listening, engaging in the chat. I love that you engage in the chat. I want to thank Felicia, the wonderful, illustrious, and wonderful Felicia, beautiful Felicia inside and out, for really just being a partner with me. And neither one of us do this because it's a job. We do it because we care about the community and we want our footprint to be a footprint of love. We've added a new person to the team. Leon Current is my executive fellow who is joining our team. And so he's going to also be helping us to increase our platform exposure and just, you know, just helping me to learn about a world that I really didn't want to learn about, wasn't prepared for. So thank you so much to all of you for supporting Life is a Sacred Journey, for supporting me in the walks of life that I walk in your life, because it's not just here. Many of you I know and have incredible relationships with, so just thank you so much. I want to start, first of all, by telling you, today you can go and get a free donut at my favorite place since I started drinking coffee, which was very young, Dunkin' Donuts. So go to Dunkin' Donuts. If you go to the one on Clayton Road in Concord, tell them Michelle Pope sent you. Those are my buddies there. But and Dunkin' Donuts, if you're watching, we want you as a sponsor, okay? So it's donut day. Go get your donut, okay? This in here, I have an old-fashioned donut. I will not be eating this donut. Okay, I'm gonna pass it on to Leon. I hope he likes donuts when he arrives. So I'm gonna put it over here because Michelle is. You already know I can't do the donut because I can't do the donut. If I eat that donut, I'll be going to every Dunkin' Donut to get a free donut. So, but I smell it and I remember how it tastes. I'm crazy, but I do remember how it tastes. The old fashioned. Dunkin' Donut is my favorite donut in the whole wide world. The other second wonderful thing that I love, I don't know if you've ever experienced it, but it's my once a month treat now. It's a ice cream parlor sandwich store called Cream. And I found out, oh man, by mistake, totally mistake, that DoorDash will go and pick up my little ice cream sandwich and bring it to my house. So it's the double chocolate vegan cookie, warm, with green tea ice cream in the middle. Okay? Oh my gosh. If you have not experienced the Cream, C-R-E-A-M, cream, just like it, the word, ice cream sandwich, you must find one or have DoorDash bring you one. Just have one once a month, once a quarter. You ain't got to get all crazy and have it a lot, but it will be an incredible experience. Sit down, get a spoon and a bowl because you're going to need it, but enjoy that. That's my one of my pass-ons to you. So Dunkin' Donuts, old-fashioned donuts, of course, coupled with Dunkin' Donuts coffee for me. And back in the day when I was a young pup with a cigarette, but no more cigarettes for a really long time now. So thank you for that, Lord. And cream ice cream sandwich, okay? And, oh, one last thing, Dove bars, chocolate Dove bars. You can get those at your local grocery store. I don't buy them anymore, but when I do buy them, because I think they come 2, 4, whatever in a pack, I take one and then I take the other to someone else. I don't have the remaining in the house because I'll eat the whole thing. I mean, I am definitely one of those people that lives out her anxiety through her food as well as through shopping. And just over these last 2 decades, through much work, I have overcome that. But it doesn't mean that when I'm under stress that I don't love a good half pint of sorbet. All right? I mean, we just, you know, life is a sacred journey. We're here being our authentic selves. I'm just telling you how I make it through the day. So thank you so much. I wanted to, there's a couple of things I've been pondering, and I want to bring back some resources because caregiving is becoming something that this we've extended this whole caregiving journey for people, and we didn't even know that this was happening with the pandemic. Caregivers were already living under stress, and now we see it even more than we, you know, So this book here, I really, it's called The Sudden Caregiver. You know, we've had Karen on our show, A Roadmap for Resilient Caregiving, Karen Warner Schuler. And it is an excellent book on when you just became a caregiver, you just suddenly became a caregiver and you're trying to figure it all out. This was an excellent read. And so I really suggest this one. Karen Warner Schuler, you can go back in the archives and listen to our interview with her, but this is a great book. The other book that I really love this, and I got to get to my sister Lynn Castile Harper. She had referred somebody to me, and just we never connected, so I want to make sure I get back to her and let her know. But On Vanishing, Mortality, Dementia, and What It Means to Disappear. So if you have somebody in your family who's experiencing Alzheimer's or dementia or any form of cognition that involves memory loss, this is a wonderful book because she talks about, you know, what it means to disappear. And from her experience as a chaplain, pastor, and at an assisted living and board and cares on the East Coast. Sister Lynn, if you're watching this morning, I hope you are well. I will connect with you soon. On Vanishing, Mortality, Dementia, and What It Means to Disappear. The next book is The Elder Care Ready Book by my dear friend Stuart Furman. He's also been on Life is a Sacred Journey. There's a larger workbook that goes along with this. I left it at home, and I only grabbed this. But the Elder Care Ready book by Stuart Furman is an incredible workbook that gets you, you know, and you can write in it. It goes through steps. There's a workbook that goes with this, so you can keep your records and all of that. Another wonderful author. Another wonderful friend and advocate for Life is a Sacred Journey for elders and for women. One of my best friends, he and his wife, Jane. Okay. Then we have The Caregiver's Companion by Carolyn Brent. Caring for your loved one medically, financially, and emotionally while caring for yourself. This is an excellent book. Again, Carolyn Brent is a monthly contributor to Life is a Sacred Journey. Her book is a workbook as well. This is the updated second edition. Great book. All of these books you can get on Amazon. They're all great reads. And what I'm saying to people is when you're done with it, gift it to another caregiver. Gift it, pass it on so that these books can be in the library of the home of somebody who is caring or has the potential of caring for someone as they age in place or they're ill. Because this is not just about aging. You know, sometimes we get sick and people have to care for us temporarily in the home. And so that these things will help with that. But I also think we need to, as we live our journey, our sacred journey, we need to have these tools in our home, because I have now been a caregiver so many times in my lifetime for people in my family, as well as people who I just are in my universal family. So as well as I chose to be an advocate caregiver as a career for the last 24 years. So no, more than that. Okay, never mind. More than that, but 24 years here at ASAP. So I just wanted to share those resources with you and remind you, these are all people who have been guests on Life is a Sacred Journey. So you can go to Michelle Pope Productions, my website, and you can look it up and hear the interview from that individual or the author of the book. Or you can go to the Life is a Sacred Journey, I believe, Facebook. Felicia will tell you that in the chat if that's not true. And you may definitely pass it on. Pass it on. Share it. Okay? So those were just some informational ponderings that I had. So what I've been thinking about most definitely since we're preparing to open our state up, I believe it's another week and a half, 15th of this month. Everybody's scurrying back to go to back to their offices and trying to figure out, you know, will they remain a hybrid model or not? And, you know, just all those kinds of things. You know, I know here at ASAB, we definitely will remain a hybrid model until 2022. We have no desire just bringing people back into the program right away, and we want to bring them back slowly. We have to beef up staff in a way that won't bankrupt us, because we definitely haven't made the revenue in the last fiscal year that we would have made if we were at capacity. So I want to say, because I'm one of those administrators that's thinking this all through, reading about all of this, trying to make sure there's equality for the employees, trying to make sure there's equality for our participants and their families and the caregivers, making sure that I'm working with our managed care providers who pay for this level of care, working with the state and being in compliance with them and complying sometimes with policies that are not realistic to the day-to-day activities in our context. Be gentle when you walk into these businesses after this pandemic period. Be gentle with the people behind the cash register who maybe are new, because their people are hiring and some people are moving into careers that they never had to do before. Or I know for many of us here, taking on second jobs because we've had to, we did some things to financially stay afloat. And so, you know, all of that. But when people come in with an attitude of entitlement through all of that, it breaks my heart. We had an incident here where someone, I don't want to say who, was just very not bending a little bit to understand that something that they wanted us to do, we were not able to do at this time. And instead of asking questions and listening, there was no listening. The person got angry and said that we didn't want to care for their loved one, which is not so. It's clearly not so. Why would we even be here? Why would we have done the things we did over the last 15, 16 months to stay open when no other organization stayed open, it providing care, meaning our model. I'm not talking about other model. I'm talking about our model. Why would we have done that if we didn't care? But we have to do things in a way that are different now. And we can't just act like COVID has disappeared off the face of the planet, because it hasn't. And so that made me ponder for you, tread gently as we go back out into the world, as we go back out into the world that we are so craving, and that we're bringing a little bit of PTSD symptomology into the experience because we've been living apart from each other. Okay? That is so important. I'm calling it the crash syndrome. I just cleaned up all my DVDs. I still watch DVDs. You know, I don't watch television per se, but I do watch documentaries on Netflix because, you know, I have children that take very good care of me. So, you know, I have access to those streamings. But I'm very particular about what I take in, my head, my heart, and my spirit, because things stick to me. Because I care so deeply about what I see and hear. And so I have to be careful. And so television is not something that I spend I don't watch it. I don't have cable. So you don't have cable. You don't get no network television. I listen to NPR news. You know, when I wake up as I'm getting my day started, I listen to NPR news in the car coming home. And then, of course, I read the New York Times. I get like three different newspapers. So I'm a reader. That's why I read, you know, Sister Carolyn Brent and I were talking last night that, you know, she can tell that I'm one of those interviewers that I actually read the person's book. Sometimes I'm disappointed because maybe I'll get the book the night before and I have to kind of, thank goodness I took speed reading in the like early 80s. I really did. You know, it's like those are the days that we took speed reading and, you know, tried to learn biofeedback for pain. I mean, so I'm a victim and an advocate of all those things. So the reality is I do read a lot. And so I also think you need to spend less time in front of the television. I'm not telling you to cut it off if it's something that you desire, because I quite frankly stopped watching television because back in the day I didn't have enough money to pay for the cable. Cable was becoming so expensive, and we'll put it this way. That's a lack way of saying it. I had enough money. I just didn't want to spend my money on cable because I had two children and I thought that maybe taking them to Fairyland or to the museum or to the something else for that $100 almost a month was more important to me. Again, no judgment, people. I'm not judging you. My children have cable. I'm not mad at anybody. I, Michelle Polk, have chosen not to have it and spend my money. I'd rather buy a pair of shoes. And now I have to replace all my 5 and 6 inch heel shoes with the little kitten heels. And so I'm investing in shoes again. But you see, my point is all of us live our lives based on what is good for us. But sometimes we have to stop the bad information that's coming in. One of my colleagues used the two words the other day, and I wrote it down, and I will remember it. You're going to hear it a lot if you're a part of my faith-based community, because I am writing a sermon around it. But he called it spiritual filth. Ooh, that hit me. I had to stop him and say that again, spiritual filth. And spiritual filth is the stuff that comes in that looks good, feels good, but once it's inside of you, it turns into garbage. It turns into filth and therefore begins to decay your faith, hope, and love. That was a light bulb aha moment for Michelle Pope. I was like, whoa, are you kidding me? That's it at the end of the day. So we have to be careful with the messaging, and we have to be careful not to follow leaders that are chosen for us. And say it again. We have to be careful not to follow leaders that are chosen for us, which means, that's my other pondering, meaning I don't have to, just because somebody represents my gender, my color, my race, my ethnicity, my culture, whatever it is, if I'm not choosing them as someone to follow or to mentor my thought process, I don't feel like the community at large has the right to tell me who to choose as a leader. We have to be careful whom we choose as leaders. Example, this wonderful young woman, Naomi, I can't remember how to pronounce her name right now, but you know who I mean, the beautiful, beautiful young woman who is an advocate, tennis player, young, on the scene, and that people had the audacity to say, should she be fined for not talking to reporters? Should she be fined for saying, I can't do this right now, boom, I need to go home and take care of myself? You know, if you were with us last week, my sister Rosalind Jones, we talked about self-care, self-love, all of that. Thank God somebody raised Miss Naomi, to understand she doesn't have to do anything that she doesn't want to do. And how dare anybody judge that and to determine whether she should be fined $15,000 from walking away from something that potentially at that moment was overwhelming and could have put her into a deep depression, anxiety, PTSD, and possibly suicide for the pleasure for humanity, supposedly. We got to be careful how we lean on people just because we enjoy the gift that they were given. I remember Tina Turner saying that she was forced to kind of retire, and now she's in bad health because she wanted to make new music. And she's not the only musician that has said this, but everybody keeps crying. Prince even, all of them, everybody wanted to hear all the old stuff. And that's great, but this person is more than the old stuff. They are still creating new stuff, and they want to share their new stuff, and people would get mad at them and say, oh, they're trying to do new music. Well, why not? They're still alive and still creative. We put so much pressure as a humanity on people to be what we want them to be instead of enjoying the fruits of their labor and the fruits of their gifts in a way that we're just grateful that they give us a snapshot of it. So to that young woman, I actually wrote her on Instagram. I'm one of her followers. I hope she sees it. I pray she sees it. And it really doesn't matter because I'm sending this vibe out to another young woman who may possibly hear this, who's out there thinking you got to do everything. No, you do not. This pandemic has taught us, no, we do not have to juggle the 9 balls that we have up in the air. We need to drop them. Let them drop to the ground and pick them up one at a time, and you only have 2 hands. I looked up, and I've been doing research, and I think I may have said this to you. I've been researching this whole idea of multitasking, and I am finding out humanly impossible to multitask in the way that we think of it. And yet, during the 90s and most of the 2000s, we've been shoving, multitasking, juggling till you drop dead to every generation. And if in fact you cannot do that, then you are not worthy of praise, promotion, money, prestige. I used to do it, so I'm speaking from experience, and it almost killed me. Uh-huh. It almost killed me. Sciatic back, couldn't hardly move, walking with a cane, insomnia, trying to make it on 3 hours of sleep every single day. Just stupidity. All for, you know what? I got to be the best I can be. I got to be the best I can be. I got to be the best I can be. If I drop this ball or that ball, people are going to think that, oh. People don't care. I finally found out most people didn't really care, that what they saw is what they thought, and they didn't really care about any of that backdrop. It was only the people that were close to me that knew that I was sleep deprived, and I found out having sleep deprivation also was contributing to my weight gain. I wasn't eating any differently. Yes, I've cut out. I'm plant-based now. You know that. After I did that 40-day fast, I can't even go back to some of the things that I ate before. But needless to say, I was not chomping down on a whole bunch of calories a day, but yet I was still gaining weight. I'm finding out insomnia and stress and all of that also contribute to the body holding on. The body is made like it's a safety mechanism. And it shoots into safety mode every time we do something that is not of the natural order of how we were created. And sometimes that means adding a little fat because, the person is stressed out. They need a little fat to stay warm and to stay whatever. So we need to understand our bodies and to figure out where we fit in to all of this. But at the end of the day, I have my allergies, my nose is itching. At the end of the day, it is very important that you understand, no, don't be multitasking. Do something well. Do it so that you enjoy it. Do it so it tickles your heart as you're doing it. And when you succeed, let it provide you that little glimmer. You know that glimmer that you get in your eye that when you're doing something you love, like right now, if you're looking in the camera, because I can look, I'm looking at myself, I can see my eyes dancing. I feel it in the back of my brain that in my head, I'm dancing with joy because I'm spending some time with all of you, because this is what I love to do, is to spend time with all of you. It all comes together when we do what we are purposed to do. So that's another pondering. Then my close to the last pondering is, how do we find hope after this pandemic when so much has happened that has enlightened us, has made us aware of our own fragility, that has made us aware of where we are in our heart, mind, and spirit around multicultural, multi-ethnic, all of it. Right? We learned a lot about ourselves because stuff banked us in the face and slapped us across the face, and we may have been at home alone when it happened, but we were impacted by it. Then we have the news, again, gun violence. Somebody said to me in a meeting not too long ago that I was being a hypochondriac around the gun violence, and we need to, be careful. 9 people down in San Jose. I don't know. I'm getting ready to do a training on, if somebody comes into the building with a gun, what are people going to do? I don't know. Could be a disgruntled employee, somebody who feels like we didn't care for somebody right, or just somebody with some mental health issues who walks into the building and starts blazing. So we don't have a gun violence issue in America? I'm just saying. We still want people just to be murdered when they go to work, and we don't want people to feel safe in a movie theater, and we don't want people to feel safe when they're in a restaurant. We don't want people to feel safe at work. Somebody puts on their clothes, toodly-loos, commutes to work, their family, their wife, whatever, their partner, friend, neighbor, have a good day, Charlie, Susie, and then they find out they've been murdered at work. Gun violence. 9-year-old down in Florida took a gun and blew his brains out. Gun violence. That's still gun violence. Anytime... Even if the person does it to themselves, that's under the category of gun violence. So my pondering is this. We get stuck in what I want. I'm going to say it again. We get stuck in the I want, I believe. But I only matters when it's about a decision that you're making for your ultimate self. So if you want to be a hunter and own a gun and go out and hunt, that's great. That means you have a license. That means you learn how to hunt. That's great. But when we have enough guns on the streets of America and all over the world that somebody can get access to a gun who is mentally ill, does not get a license for it, and they have the kind of gun that my brother Gary Jones used when he was in Desert Storm, we got a problem. So we got to stop saying, my rights, the Constitution says. First of all, now I'm going to go deep for a minute. If we really believed in the Constitution as a humanity and we're really following it, when it was good in our favor and not in our favor, all men are created equal. Oh, excuse me. So we got to stop acting like the Constitution just when we want to use the Constitution to do what we want to do, that we're living that out as a totality, as a humanity, because we're not. But that's just like saying, I'm trying to think of a scenario, you know, or when like when my, oh, I want this. Well, no, you can't have it. But so-and-so has it, and their mom or they, well, no. We need to decide what's good for us, and then we need to decide what's good for the collective. A 9-year-old shouldn't even be able to find a gun to blow their brains out. I'm just saying. And people stop thinking that we shouldn't be able to have these conversations without you being angry with me because I think differently than you. That's a part of the life conversation. That's a part of communication. That's what makes life wonderful for me, is having conversations with people that I don't have the same opinion with, but I don't be digging or trying to stab their hearts out and trying to beat them over the head to convert them to my way of thinking. I don't have to do that. I have no desire to do that. I just want to share information and for people to share information with me. So just because somebody disagrees with you or has a different opinion, that's not a reason for you to hate them or to beat them up or to talk about them behind their back. We need to come back out of this pandemic embracing hope and finding hope and judgment and talking about other people and telling them that they're totally wrong and crazy. You know, I love talking. I just had a conversation with a person who is a lifetime NRA, national, whatever that's called, member, and I hugged him. Because he and I both have had shots. We were here in the office. And I hugged him after. It's like, dude, you know, I disagree. And these are the reasons I disagree. But I love you anyway because you know what? He's a good person. He's a good person. He's not going around killing anybody. But at the end of the day, I had to explain to him what the problem is that we have a system where we have machine guns and things that shouldn't be on the street. In community. And then we hugged each other because we hadn't seen each other for over 16 months. We got to learn to have conversations with that don't bubble up and make us feel like we have to hate somebody or disagree in a way that makes people feel uncomfortable. So we have lost almost 600,000 Americans to the pandemic. That's a lot of loss. As a community, I feel like we haven't done enough to acknowledge that loss, you know, that we really need to acknowledge the loss of, that's a lot of people. And I know we've had some mournings and we've had some, you know, some things that have happened, but we do need to know that's a large amount. Because that's more deaths than even World War II. A whole war. So what do we need to do to move back into a place of hope? I think we need to find moments of laughter, to be in moments of laughter with family and friends, to be in moments of laughter with oneself. Moments of laughter, moments of joy, that just laughter is, it makes you breathe properly. So we need to find moments of laughter. We need to get back to a time before, way before the pandemic, where we did care about our neighbors and that we knew their names, and that borrowing a cup of sugar or going down the street and getting an egg was something that people did all the time. I've never done that since I moved to California. I've been in California now 34 years, and I've never done that. Back home I did, because it was a different time and a different environment. But not here in California. That doesn't mean I don't have nice neighbors. I just don't know them like that. And I've lived between two sets of neighbors for a really long time. I like them. They're nice people. I wave. We chat at the garbage thing when we're pulling our garbage in. But I don't know them well enough to feel comfortable to run to their house and say, will you give me, can I take an egg or a thing of flour? Or, wow. I've been thinking a lot about that. I grew up in a time like that where people bartered services, and, you know, somebody needed a jump in their car, and, you know, they didn't have to call AAA. Their neighbor would come out and start their car for them. Or I mean, it was just community. But we use the word community more now without any examples of it. In many, many communities, people don't even come out of their houses even before the pandemic and talk to each other. But boy, let your grass grow too high. Or you paint your fence, like one of my neighbors two houses down, he painted his fence white with beautiful big green circles on it. And boy, people talked to me then because they wanted me to complain about his fence. You see how, you know, so this is just a pondering. I'm a victim of it. I probably have victimized, because we get caught up in what we want instead of what's good for the community. I love that fence. I'm so happy that he didn't undo it, you know. And when the person from down the street came up to me and said, we're going to be petitioning, I said, well, you'll be doing that without me, because I like that fence. I like it a lot, actually. So again, when you talk about property values over the lives of people, I get it. I don't want anybody having 50 million cars that are all broken down and rusted on their front lawn. I get that stuff. I get that stuff. But I don't get the stuff that's just doggone straight out mean. Just mean. Just because you can. Be mean. No. We're not in a sandbox. Or if we are in the sandbox, let's change our behavior in the sandbox. When my children, I take them to the park, or children that I've loved in my life, when I take them to the park, we have sandbox etiquette. We don't throw sand in each other's face. We don't take somebody else's toys unless we ask for their toys. And we share, and we be nice, and have a good time. And Auntie Shell would sit on the bench, and I'll watch you. And sometimes if they let me, I'll play with them. Basic rules that we teach children, but yet by the time we're adults, we forget what we've taught. And we do the complete opposite. And then we wonder, as I said a couple of ponderings ago, why young people come out the way they do, because they follow what we do, not by what we say. That's why. Yeah. And I've made some due mistakes. I know I have. I know I have. And I've had to apologize to my children for those due mistakes where I made mistakes. Sorry. And I'm not being flippant about the sorry. I mean the sorry. But at the end of the day, they were mistakes that I didn't understand. I didn't have enough data and once I did, I had to humble myself to go back and say, just because I'm the powerful parent, I've made a mistake and I owe you an apology. And the same thing applies as we walk this earth. We need to walk this earth differently. So how do we come out? How do we learn to trust again? How do we learn to trust each other? How do we learn to trust systems? How do we learn to retrust or to begin learning how to trust? Because when we trust, we have hope, we can share love, we become grateful. The formula is very simple. Those things are just so hard to live out, very hard to live out. So we have to learn to retrust again. We also have to get rid of our doubt that we will one day get beyond this place, our doubt that we even had a pandemic, and a doubt that still need to wear our mask in public places. The CDC, yes, has lowered and will continue to lower the trajectory of what, you know, whether you're going to have to wear a mask or whatever. But when I know in 2016, I think it was, when I went through the Singapore airport on my way to Indonesia, everybody had on a mask. All the Europeans, all the other people had on masks. You could tell the us Americans. Maybe that's the way it's going to be. When we travel, we have to wear a mask. When we get on BART, we have to wear a mask. And you know what will happen? We'll take down colds, we'll take down flu, we'll take down all of that stuff because we won't be sneezing and stuff into the air. I don't know. And quite frankly, there's a part of me that doesn't care because I'm going to wear a mask. I've already decided I'm wearing a mask in a public setting until nobody is wearing a mask anywhere in the whole wide world. I've already made that decision. I've actually ordered some really cute masks because I'm getting ready to get down. Because I'm getting ready to go back out into the world, but I am not going into a public setting and expose myself to any new strains or anything else. I'm over 60, and I want to protect my life, and I'm going to make that decision for myself. So go to the CDC, read everything, understand what the limitations are, and then make a choice for yourself. I hope you choose a choice that means that we're a collective and not just an I, that we are a we and not just an I. And when you make that choice, then be okay with it. And don't worry about what anybody else thinks and all of that foolishness. And because I'm not. And again, I'm not saying be me, but you can't worry about stuff that you don't have any control over. That's the other reason I'm doing all this longevity stuff. And the reality is they said people who live longer, it's because they really do stop worrying about stuff that they have no control over. As my mom used to say, they have no dime in that quarter. So hard to do. Hard to do, but we're going to have nice long lives filled with joy, filled with hope, filled with connection, and filled with inquisitiveness and filled with love. And when we do that, then there's nothing that we cannot do as a human race together. So regardless of how our communities move forward, regardless of how anything happens in our world, we must move forward together. We got to get rid of all of our slogans and our rhetoric and take it off the t-shirt. I love t-shirts that have good stuff on them. But if all you're going to do is put a t-shirt on with a good slogan, a good graphic art and all of that, and it's not going to soak through your DNA, and you go out into the world with love, gratitude, and hope in your heart so that you can show up differently with your fellow human beings, then I challenge you to think differently, to think a little differently about who you are. And if anybody hasn't told you lately, I love you. I love you. I love you so much that I'll wear a mask for you. I love you so much that I will not rob or steal from you. I love you so much that I won't speak ill of you. I love you so much that I will work to all the stuff that's in me that separates me from you. I'll work on it. I'll work on it so I can show up differently. I joked a couple of weeks ago where I said, I love humanity, people I can't stand. I was having a bad people day. But I will always rise higher. I'll always rise higher and love humanity and fight for humanity and pray for humanity, that we come together in a different way. Let's reset our lives, my siblings, my family, my friends, so that we can go out into the world in a different way, in a new way, in an exciting way that allows us to really have heaven on earth, you know? And again, I mean, for those of you who hate that I go spiritual, I don't mean to offend you, but it's who I am. Heaven on earth to me means I say good morning, that when I'm humming, when I'm getting in my car, I'm humming and I'll say good morning to my neighbor, even the neighbor who never says good morning back. I have one of those neighbors. I've said good morning to that neighbor and waved to that neighbor ever since I've lived in that house, and that person refuses to say good morning back or to wave back, but I will never stop. I will never stop. Every time that person is out in their front yard, I am going to say good morning and I'm going to wave to them. And if I die and they never say good morning or wave back, it will not matter because I'm doing the right thing. And that's all that matters. It tickles me too, because I wonder, I think to myself, you look crazy out here. People probably think that you, who are you talking to? But you know, it doesn't matter, because that's the thing about finding joy in your life. My last pondering, my sibling, is it doesn't matter. I can laugh at myself as much as anybody talks about me or laughs at me or thinks I'm ridiculous. I laugh at myself more than you possibly could. I judge myself harder than you possibly could. So when I'm living from within, then the things that are happening around me, while they're important, they don't carry the same level of attack on who I am. I don't change as quickly in the sense of, even in an oppression moment. Like I was in a meeting yesterday, and there was so much implicit bias going on in this meeting and oppression going on in this meeting. I was so mad during the whole meeting, and I wanted to say something, but I was mad. And I try not to speak from anger, because it's not healthy. But I was angry. And then I started thinking about it, and I was like, Michelle, you got to let it go. Let it go. And then it became humorous to me in many, many ways, because to be honest, this meeting was with a group of people who are very liberal, very self-actualized, but they are committing implicit bias, probably without their knowledge. But as Dr. Pearl says, some of them, I think, are doing it with knowledge. Therefore, it's no longer implicit bias. It's moved to the other side. So I got to figure out what to do with that situation, because I've been pondering that all night. That meeting jacked me up yesterday. I was like, whoa, going home, I just kept thinking to myself, these are probably the most liberal people that I know. But wow. So we have a lot of work to do, but we have to do it patiently, and we got to take baby steps, because we took baby steps to get here. And at the end of the day, we have to make the world a better place for the next generations and even for the generations now. And we have to take care of each other and stop crashing into each other. I want to thank the three survivors of the Tulsa massacre for telling their stories over the last 3 weeks, for lifting up what happened in their lives so that the stories of real hatred can't be glossed over, but that they can be recognized, that we can honor the fact that they really did happen, and that we as a country can really be very ugly. I'm reminded today that there was a ship of Jewish immigrants coming over from Germany that was turned away by America. So we've got some things to work on. We're a great country. Yes, we are. Yes, we are. Hands down. But can't wallow in it. Like my father said, you're only as good as your last paycheck. I've lived with that my whole life. You're only as good as your last paycheck. So we got to stop living in the glory days of history and rewrite history for the future, where all man, all woman, all people, all humans are created equal. And when we do that, man, let's have a barbecue. Let's have a worldwide barbecue all across the world. We'll smell barbecue. Because it means people will be coming together regardless of what caste system they come from, regardless of who they are, and we will be living out our humanity and our best lives in a way that, wow, I wonder what would happen if we all came out of our houses at the same time across the world. Some people would have to get up early in the morning or late at night and just shout it out. I love you, brother and sister, wherever you are. And we did that once a month for a whole year. Would it change our DNA? Would it change who we are if we looked at every human being as our brother or our sister or as our they, as however? However they identify, if we just looked at them as a human, because I don't care, whatever pronoun you use, whatever, however you tag yourself, the bottom line, you are a human being. If we treated everybody like a human being, what a wonderful world it would be. All right, you guys, have a great weekend. I've got a busy weekend coming up. I hope yours is not as busy and that you take some time out for self. Roz's idea of, you know, taking a nap, go take a nap today. Hug yourself, hug somebody else. If you're both vaccinated, you can do it. Tell somebody you love them. Look in the mirror and tell yourself that you love yourself. Because if you don't love yourself, it's hard to love somebody else. Start with you. May you be the change you want to see in the world. And may nothing but peace be with you throughout this entire day and until we're back together on Life is a Sacred Journey. I want to thank all of you for making this a pit stop. on your way to your Friday, and peace.
The recording has stopped.